Well, it was the letting in of this new Chelovat that was really the start of my getting out of the old Stasia. For he was such a nasty, quarrelsome type of plenty, with a very dirty mind and filthy intentions, that trouble naturated that very same day. He was also very boastful and started to make with a very sneery litso at us all, and a loud, proud gollus. He made out that he was the only real horror show Prestupnik in the whole zoo, going on that he'd done this and he'd done the other and killed 10 Rosses with one crack of his rooker and all that cow. But nobody was very impressed, oh my brothers. So then he started on me being the youngest there, trying to say that as the youngest, I ought to be the one to Zaznut on the floor and not him. But all the others were for me, creeching. Leave him alone, you Grazny Brachny. And then he began the old whine about how nobody loved him. So that notchy, I woke up to find this horrible plenty actually lying with me on my bunk, which was on the bottom of the three tier, and also very narrow. And he was gover-eating dirty like love slovos, and stroke, stroke, stroking away. So then I got real bazoomy and lashed out, though I could not video all that horror show, there being only this malenky little red light outside on the landing. But I knew it was this one, the vonny bastard. And then when the trouble really got underway, and the lights were turned on, I could vidi his horrible litso with all crovy dripping from his rot where I'd hit out with my clawing rooker. What slachatted then, of course, was that my cellmates woke up and started to join in, toll-chocking a bit wild in the near dark, and the shum seemed to wake up the whole tier, so that you could slushy a lot of creeching and banging about with tin mugs on the wall, as though all the plennies in all the cells thought a big break was about to commence, oh my brothers. So then the lights came on, and the chassos came along in their shirts and trousers and caps, waving big sticks. We could vidi each other's flushed litsos and the shaking of fisty rookers, and there was a lot of creeching and cursing. Then I put in my complaint, and every chasso said it was probably your humble narrator brothers that started it all. Anyway, me having no mark of a scratch on me, but this horrible plenty dripping red, red crovy from the rot where I'd got him with my chlorine rooker. That made me real bazoomly. I said I would not sleep another notchy in that cell if the prison authorities were going to allow horrible, vonny, stinking, perverted Prestupniks to leap on my plot when I was in no position to defend myself being asleep. Wait till the morning, they said. Is it a private room with bath and television that your honour requires? Well, all that will be seen to in the morning. But for the present, little droog, get your bleeding Gulliver down on your straw-filled padushka and let's have no more trouble from anyone. Right, right, right. Then off they went with stern warnings for all. Then soon after the lights went out, and then I said I would set up all the rest of the notchy, saying first to this horrible Prestupnik, go on, get on my bunk if you wish. I fancy it no longer. You having made it filthy and cally with your horrible vonny plot lying on it already. But then the others joined in. Big Jew said, still sweating from the bit of bitva we'd had in the dark. We're not having that, we're not, brothers. Don't give in to the squirt. So this new one said, crash your dermot, yid, meaning to shut up. But it was very insulting. So then Big Jew got ready to launch a tolchok. The doctor said, come on, gentlemen, we don't want any trouble, do we? In his very high-class gollus. But this new Prestupnik was really asking for it. You could vidi that he thought he was a very big Bolshevik, and it was beneath his dignity to be sharing a cell with six, and having to sleep on the floor till I made this gesture at him. In his sneery way, he tried to take off the doctor, saying, oh, you want no more trouble, is that it? Archie Balls. So Joe John, mean and keen and wiry, said, if we can't have sleep, let's have some education. Our new friend here had better be taught a lesson. Although he like specialised in sexual assault, he had a nice way of gover-eating, quiet and like precise. So the new plenty sneered, kish and kosh and koosh, you little terror. So then it all really started, but in a queer, like gentle way, with nobody raising his gollus much. The new plenty creached a malenky bit at first, but the wall fisted his rot while Big Jew held him up against the bars so that he could be vidied in the malenky red light from the landing. and he just went, "Oh, oh, oh." He was not a very strong type of vec, being very feeble in his trying to toe chop back. And I suppose he made up for this by being shoomy in the gollus and very boastful. Anyway, seeing the old crovy flow red in the red light, I felt the old joy like rising up in my kishkas, and I said, "Leave him to me, go on. Let me have him now, brothers." So Big Jew said, "Yes, yes, boys, that's fair. Floss him then, Alex." So they all stood round while I cracked at this prestupnik in the near dark. I fisted him all over, dancing about with my boots on, though unlaced. And then I tripped him and he went crash, crash, onto the floor. I gave him one real horror show kick on the gulliver and he went, "Oh!" Then he sort of snorted off to, like, sleep. And the doctor said, "Very well. I think that will be enough of a lesson," squinting to Vinny this downed and beaten up vec on the floor. "Let him dream, perhaps, about being a better boy in future." So we all climbed back into our bunks, being very tired now. What I dreamt of, oh my brothers, was of being in some very big orchestra, hundreds and hundreds strong, and the conductor was like a mixture of Ludwig van and G.F. Handel, looking very deaf and blind and weary of the world. I was with the wind instruments, but what I was playing was like a white, pinky bassoon, made of flesh and growing out of my plot, right in the middle of my belly. And when I blew into it, I had to smack, "Ha ha ha," very loud, because it like tickled. And then Ludwig van G.F. got very razdraz and bazoomy. Then he came right up to my litzo and creeched loud in my ukko. And then I woke up like sweating. Of course, what the loud shoom really was the prison buzzer going brrr, brrr, brrr. It was winter morning and my glazies were all cally with sleep glue. And when I opened up, they were very sore in the electric light that had been switched on all over the zoo. Then I looked down and vidded this new prestupnik lying on the floor, very bloody and bruisey, and still out, out, out. Then I remembered about last night, and that made me smack a bit. But when I got off the bunk and moved him with my bare noga, there was a feel of light stiff coldness. So I went over to the doctor's bunk and shook him. He always being very slow waking up in the morning. But he was off his bunk scorry enough this time, and so were the others, except for Wall, who slept like dead meat. "Very unfortunate," the doctor said. "A heart attack, that's what it must have been." Then he said, looking round at us all, "You really shouldn't have gone for him like that. It was most ill-advised, really." Joe John said, "Come on, Doc, you weren't all that backward yourself in giving him a sly bit of fist." Then Big Jew turned on me, saying, "Alex, you were too impetuous. That last kick was a very, very nasty one." I began to get razdress about this and said, "Who started it, eh? I only got in at the end, didn't I?" I pointed at Joe John and said, "It was your idea." Wall snored a bit loud, so I said, "Wake that Vonnie Bratsney up. It was him that kept on at his rot while Big Jew here had him held up against the bars." The doctor said, "Nobody will deny having a little hit at the man to teach him a lesson, so to speak. But it's apparent that you, my dear boy, with the forcefulness and, shall I say, heedlessness of youth, dealt him the coup de grace. It's a great pity." "Traitors," I said. "Traitors and liars, because I could vid it was all like before, 2 years before, when my so-called droogs had left me to the brutal rookers of the Millicents. There was no trust anywhere in the world, oh my brothers, the way I could see it. And Joe John went and woke up Wall, and Wall was only too ready to swear that it was your humble narrator that had done the real dirty toll-chocking and brutality. When the Chassos came along, and then the Chief Chasso, and then the Governor himself, all these cell droogs of mine were very shoomy with tales of what I'd done to Ubivat, this worthless pervert whose crovy-covered plot lay sack-like on the floor. That was a very queer day, oh my brothers. The dead plot was carried off, and then everybody in the whole prison had to stay locked up till further orders. And there was no piss-chuck given out, not even a mug of hot chai. We just all sat there, and the warders or chassos sort of strode up and down the tier, now and then screeching, "Shut it!" or Close that hole! Whenever they slushied even a whisper from any of the cells. Then about 11 o'clock in the morning, there was a sort of like stiffening and excitement, and like the von of fear spreading from outside the cell. And then we could vidy the governor and the chief chasso and some very bolshy important-looking Cheloveks walking by real scurry, gover-eating like Bazoomney. They seemed to walk right to the end of the tier. Then they could be slushied walking back again, more slow this time. And you could slushy the governor, a very sweaty, fatty, fair-haired vec, saying slovos like, "But sir," and, "Well, what can be done, sir," and so on. Then the whole lot stopped at our cell, and the chief chasso opened up. Yugovidi was the real important vec right away, very tall and with blue glazies, and with real horror show platties on him. The most lovely suit, brothers, I had ever vidied, absolutely in a height for fashion. He just sort of looked right through us poor plenty, saying, in a very beautiful, real educated gollus, "The government cannot be concerned any longer with outmoded penological theories. Cram criminals together and see what happens. You get concentrated criminality. Crime in the midst of punishment. Soon we may be needing all our prison space for political offenders." I didn't pony this at all, brothers. But after all, he was not gover-eating to me. Then he said, "Common criminals like this unsavoury crowd," that meant me, brothers, as well as the others, who were real prestupniks and treacherous with it, "can best be dealt with on a purely curative basis. Kill the criminal reflex, that's all. Full implementation in a year's time. Punishment means nothing to them. You can see that. They enjoy their so-called punishment. They start murdering each other." And he turned his stern blue glasses on me, so I said bold, "With respect, sir, I object very strongly to what you said then. I am not a common criminal, sir, and I am not unsavoury. The others may be unsavoury, but I am not." The chief chasso went all purple and creeched, "You shut your bleeding mouth, you! Don't you know who this is?" All right," said this big vec. Then he turned to the governor and said, "You can use him as a trailblazer. He's young, bold, vicious. Brodsky will deal with him tomorrow, and you can sit in and watch Brodsky. It works all right. Don't worry about that. This vicious young hoodlum will be transformed out of all recognition. And those hard slovos, brothers, were like the beginning of my freedom." The very same evening, I was dragged down nice and gentle by brutal toll-chocking chassos to vidy the governor in his holy of holies holy office. The governor looked very weary at me and said, "I don't suppose you know who that was this morning, do you, 6655321? And without waiting for me to say no, he said, "That was no less a personage than the Minister of the Interior, the new Minister of the Interior, and what they call a very new broom. Well, these new ridiculous ideas have come at last, and orders are orders. Though I may say to you in confidence that I do not approve, I most emphatically do not approve. An eye for an eye, I say. If someone hits you, you hit back, do you not? Why then should not the state, very severely hit by you brutal hooligans, not hit back also? But the new view is to say no. The new view is that we turn the bad into the good. All of which seems to me grossly unjust, So I said, trying to be, like, respectful and accommodating, "Sir?" And then the chief chasso, who was standing all red and burly behind the governor chair, screeched, "Shut your filthy hole, you scum!" All right," said the, like, tired and fagged-out governor. "You, 6655321, are to be reformed. Tomorrow you go to this man Brodsky. It is believed that you will be able to leave state custody in a little over a fortnight. In a little over a fortnight you will be out again in the big free world. No longer a number, I supposed." And he snorted a bit here. "That prospect pleases you?" I said nothing, so the chief chasso creeched, "Answer, you filthy young swine, when the governor asks you a question!" So I said, "Oh, yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I've done my best here, really I have. I'm very grateful to all concerned." "Don't be," like sighed the governor. "This is not a reward. This is far from being a reward. Now, there is a form here to be signed. It says that you are willing to have the residue of your sentence commuted to submission to what is called here, ridiculous expression, reclamation treatment. Will you sign? Most certainly I will sign, I said, sir, and many thanks. So I was given an ink pencil and I signed my name nice and flowy. The governor said, right, that's the lot, I think. The chief chasso said, the prison chaplain would like a word with him, sir. So I was marched out and off down the corridor towards the wing chapel, toll-chocked on the back of the Gulliver all the way by one of the chassos, but in a very like yawny and bored manner. And I was marched across the wing chapel to the little cantora of the Charles, and then made to go in. The Charles was sitting at his desk, smelling loud and clear of a fine Manny Von of expensive cancers and scotch. He said, ah, little 6655321, be seated. And to the chassos, wait outside, eh? Which they did. Then he spoke in a very light, earnest way to me, saying, one thing I want you to understand, boy, is that this is nothing to do with me. Were it expedient, I would protest about it, but it is not expedient. There is a question of my own career. There is the question of the weakness of my own voice when set against the shout of certain more powerful elements in the polity. Do I make myself clear? He didn't, brothers, but I nodded that he did. Very hard ethical questions are involved, he went on. You are to be made into a good boy, 6655321. Never again will you have the desire to commit acts of violence or to offend in any way whatsoever against the state's peace. I hope you take all that in. I hope you are absolutely clear in your own mind about that. I said, oh, it will be nice to be good, sir. But I had a real horror show smack at that inside, brothers. He said, it may not be nice to be good, little 6655321. It may be horrible to be good. And when I say that to you, I realize how self-contradictory that sounds. I know I shall have many sleepless nights about this. What does God want? Does God want goodness or the choice of goodness? Is a man who chooses the bad perhaps in some way better than the man who has the good imposed upon him? Deep and hard questions, little 6655321. But all I want to say to you now is this. If at any time in the future you look back on these times and remember me, the lowest and humblest of all God's servitors, do not, I pray, think evil of me in your heart, thinking me any way involved in what is now about to happen to you. And now, talking of praying, I realize sadly that there will be little point in praying for you. You are passing now to a region where you will be beyond the reach of the power of prayer. A terrible, terrible thing to consider. And yet, in a sense, in choosing to be deprived of the ability to make an ethical choice, you have, in a sense, really chosen the good. So shall I like to think. So God help us all, 6655321. I shall like to think. And then he began to cry. But I didn't really take much notice of that, brothers, only having a bit of a quiet smack inside, because you could vidy that he'd been peating away at the old whiskey. And now he took a bottle from the cupboard in his desk and started to pour himself a real horror show bolshy slog into a very greasy and grazny glass. He downed it and then said,
all may be well, who knows? God works in a mysterious way.
Then he began to sing away at a hymn in a real loud, rich gollus. Then the door opened and the chassers came in and toll-chocked me back to my vonny cell. But the old Charles still went on singing this hymn. Well, the next morning I had to say goodbye to the old stager. And I felt a malenky bit sad, as you always will when you have to leave a place you've like got used to. But I didn't go very far, oh my brothers. I was punched and kicked along to the new white buildings, just beyond the yard where we used to do our bit of exercise. This was a very new building, and it had a new cold-like, sizey smell, which gave you a bit of the shivers. I stood there in the horrible, bolshy, bare hall, and I got new Vons, sniffing away there with my very light sensitive mortar or sniffer. These were like hospital Vons, and a Chelovek the Chasso handed me over to had a white coat on, as he might be a hospital man. He signed for me, and one of the brutal Chassos who brought me in said, "You watch this one, sir. A right brutal bastard he has been, and will be again, in spite of all his sucking up to the prison chaplain and reading the Bible." But this new Chelovek smiled with his glazes and his fine big rot, which was full of shining white zubies, and I sort of took to this Vec right away. Anyway, he passed me on to a like lesser Vec in a white coat, and this one was very nice too. And I was led off to a very nice white clean bedroom with curtains and a bedside lamp, and just one bed in it, all for your humble narrator. So I had a real horror show in a smack at that, thinking I was really a very lucky young male chickiewick. I was told to take off my horrible prison platties, and I was given a really beautiful set of pyjamas, oh, my brothers, in plain green, the height of bedwear fashion. And I was given a nice warm dressing gown too, and lovely twofles to put my bare nogas in. And I thought, well, Alex boy, little 6655321, as was, you have copped it lucky and no mistake. You are really going to enjoy it here. After I'd been given a nice chasser of real horror show coffee and some old gazettas and mags to look at while peating it, the first Vec in white came in, the one who had like signed for me, and he said, "Aha, there you are." A silly sort of vest to say, but it didn't sound silly, this Vec being so like nice. "My name," he said, "is Dr. Branham. I'm Dr. Brodsky's assistant. With your permission, I'll just give you the usual brief overall examination." And he took the old Stefo out of his right carmine. "We must make sure you're quite fit, mustn't we?" "Yes, indeed, we must." So while I lay there with my pyjama top off, he did this, that, and the other. I said, "What exactly is it, sir, that you're going to do?" "Oh," said Dr. Branham, his cold Stefo going all down my back. "It's quite simple, really. We just show you some films." "Films?" I said. I could hardly believe my uckos, brothers, as you may well understand. "You mean," I said, "it will be just like going to the pictures?" "There'll be special films," said this Dr. Branham. "Very special films. You'll be having your first session this afternoon." "Yes," he said, getting up from bending over me. "You seem to be quite a fit young boy. A bit undernourished, perhaps. That will be the fault of the prison food. Put your pyjama top back on." "After every meal," he said, sitting on the edge of the bed, "we shall be giving you a shot in the arm. That should help." I felt really grateful to this very nice Dr. Branham. I said, "Vitamin, sir, will it be?" "Something like that," he said, smiling real horror show and friendly. "Just a jab in the arm after every meal." Then he went out. I lay on the bed thinking this was like real heaven, and I read some of the mags they'd given me. World Sport, Cine, this being a film mag, and Goal. Then I lay back on my bed and shut my glasses and thought how nice it was going to be out there again. Alex with perhaps a nice easy job during the day, me being now too old for the old schoolie wall, and then perhaps getting a new like gang together for the Notchy. And the first rabbit would be to get old Dim and Pete, if they had not been got already by the Millicents. This time I would be very careful not to get loveted. They were given another like chance, me having done murder and all, and it would be not like fair to get loveted again, after going to all this trouble to show me films that were going to make me a real good male chick. I'd a real like horror show smack at everybody's like innocence. And I was smacking my Gulliver off when they brought in my lunch on a tray. The Vec who brought it in was the one who'd led me to this Malenki bedroom when I came into the mess, though, and he said, "It's nice to know somebody's happy." It was really a very nice appetising bit of pisture they'd laid out on the tray. Two or three lomticks of like hot roast beef and mashed kartoffel and veg. Then there was also ice cream and a nice hot chasser of chai. And there was even a cancer of smoke and a matchbox with one match in it. So this looked like it was the life, oh my brothers. Then, about half an hour after, while I was lying a bit sleepy on the bed, a woman nurse came in, a real nice young divotchka with real horror show groodies. I had not seen such for 2 years. And she had a tray with a hypodermic, I said. Ah, the old vitamins, eh? And I click-clicked at her, but she took no notice. All she did was to slam the needle into my left arm, and then shh, in went the vitamin stuff. Then she went out again, clack-clack, on her high-heeled nogas. Then the white-coated vec, who was like a male nurse, came in with a wheelchair. I was a melenky bit surprised to vidy that. I said, what giveth then, brother? I can walk surely to whether we have to itty to. But he said, best I push you there. And indeed, oh my brothers, when I got off the bed, I found myself a melenky bit weak. It was the undernourishment, like Dr. Branham had said, all that horrible prison pishture. But the vitamins in the afternoon injection would put me right. No doubt at all about that, I thought. Where I was wheeled to, brothers, was like no cine I'd ever vidded before. True enough, one wall was all covered with silver screen, and direct opposite was a wall with square holes for the projector to project through. And there were stereo speakers stuck all over the mess, though. But against the right-hand one of the other walls was a bank of all like little meters, and in the middle of the floor, facing the screen, was like a dentist chair with all lengths of wire running from it. And I had to, like, crawl from the wheelchair to this, being given some help by another, like, male nurse vec in a white coat. Then I noticed that underneath the projection holes was, like, all frosted glass, and I thought I vidded shadows of, like, people moving behind it, and I thought I slushied someone cough. But then, all I could, like, notice was how weak I seemed to be. And I put that down to changing over from prison pishka to the new rich pishka and the vitamins injected into me. Right, said the wheelchair-wheeling vet. Now I'll leave you. The show will commence as soon as Dr. Brodsky arrives. Hope you enjoy it. To be truthful, brothers, I did not really feel that I wanted to vidy any film show this afternoon. I was just not in the mood. I would have liked much better to have a nice quiet spatchka on the bed, nice and quiet, all on the oddy knocky. I felt very limp. What happened now was that one white-coated vec strapped my Gulliver to like a headrest, singing to himself all the time some Vonnie Kelly pop song. What's this for? I said. And this vec replied, interrupting his like song an instance, that it was to keep my Gulliver still and make me look at the screen. But, I said, I want to look at the screen. I've been brought here to vidy films, and vidy films I shall. And the other white-coated vet, there were three altogether, one of them a divotchka, who was like sitting at the bank of meters and twiddling with knobs, had a bit of a smeck at that. He said, you never know. Oh, you never know. Trust us, friend. It's better this way. And then I found they were strapping my rookers to the chair arms, and my nogas were like stuck to a footrest. It seemed a bit bazoomy to me, but I let them get on with what they wanted to get on with. If I was to be a free young male chick again in a fortnight's time, I would put up with much in the meantime. Oh, my brothers, one vesh I did not like, though, was when they put, like, clips on the skin of my forehead, so that my top glass lids were pulled up and up and up, and I could not shut my glasses no matter how I tried. I tried to smack and said, this must be a real horror show film if you're so keen on my vidy in it. And one of the white coat vets said, smecking, horror show is right, friend. A real show of horrors. And then I had a light cap stuck on me Gulliver, and I could vidy all wires running away from it. And they stuck like suction pad on my belly, and one on the old tick-tocker, and I could just about vidy wires running away from nose. Then there was the shoom of a door opening, and you could tell some very important chelovec was coming in by the way the white-coated undervex went all stiff. And then I vetted this Dr. Brodsky. He was a malenki vec, very fat, with all curly hair curling all over his gulliver, and on his spuddy nose he had very thick hotchkeys. I could just vidy that he had a real horror show suit on, absolutely the height of fashion. And he had a, like, delicate and subtle von of operating theatres coming from him. With him was Dr. Branham, all smiling, like, as though to give me confidence. "Everything ready?" said Dr. Brodsky in a very breathy gollus. Then I could sluicy voices saying, "Right, right, right," from like a distance, then nearer too. Then there was a quiet like humming shoom as though things had been switched on. And then the lights went out, and there was your humble narrator and friend sitting alone in the dark, all on his frightened oddy knocky, not able to move nor shut his glazies nor anything. And then, oh my brothers, the film show started off with some very grumpy atmosphere music coming from the speakers, very fierce and full of discord. And then, on the screen, the picture came on. But there was no title and no credits. What came on was a street, as it might have been any street in any town. It was a dark notchy and the lamps were lit. It was a very good, like, professional piece of cine, and there were none of these flickers and blobs you get, say, when you video one of these dirty films in somebody's house in a back street. All the time the music bumped out, very, like, sinister, and then you could video an old man coming down the street, very starry. And then there leapt out on this starry vec two male chicks dressed in the height of fashion. It was, at this time, still thin trousers, but no light cravat anymore, more of a real tie. And then they started to filly with him. You could sluice his screams and moans, very realistic, and you could even get the light heavy breathing and panting of the two toll-chocking male chicks. They made a real pudding out of this starry vet, going crack, crack, crack at him with their fisty rookers, tearing his platties off, and then finishing up by booting his nagoy plot. This lay all crovy red in the grasny mud of the gutter, and then running off very scurry. Then there was a close-up gulliver of this beaten-up starry vec, and the crovy flowed beautiful red. It's funny how the colours of light the real world only seem real when you video them on screen. Now, all the time I was watching this, I was beginning to get very aware of a light not feeling all that well. And I put this down to the undernourishment of my stomach, not quite ready for the rich pishka and vitamins I was getting here. But I tried to forget this, concentrating on the next film, which came on at once, My Brothers, without any break at all. This time the film jumped right away on a young divotchka who was being given the old in-out by first one male chick, then another, then another, then another. She creeching away real grumpy through the speakers and like very pathetic and tragic music going on at the same time. This was real, very real, though if you thought about it properly, you couldn't imagine Ludi's actually agreeing to have all this done to them in a film. And if these films were made by the good or the state, you couldn't imagine them being allowed to take these films without, like, interfering with what was going on. So it must have been very clever what they call cutting or editing or some such vesh, for it was very real. And when it came to the sixth or seventh male chick leering and smecking and then going into it, and the divotchka creaching on the soundtrack like Bazumni, then I began to feel sick. I had, like, pains all over, and I felt I could sick up, and at the same time, not sick up. And I began to feel, like, in distress, oh, my brothers, being fixed rigid, too, on this chair. When this bit of film was over, I could sluicy the gollus of this Dr. Brodsky from over by the switchboard, saying, "Reaction about 12.5, promising, promising." Then we shot into another lomtick of film, and this time it was just a human litzo. A very, like, pale human face held still and having different nasty veshes done to it. I was sweating a malenky bit with a pain in my guts and a horrible thirst and my gulliver going throb, throb, throb. And it seemed to me that if I could not video this bit of film, I would perhaps be not so sick. But I could not shut my glasses, and even if I tried to move my glass balls about, I still could not get, like, out of the line of the fire of this picture. So I had to go on video and what was being done and bearing the most ghastly creaching coming from this litzo. I knew it could not really be real, but that made no difference. I was heaving away, but could not sick, videoing first a Ritva cut out an eye, then slice down the cheek, then go rip, 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 all over, while red crovy shot onto the camera lens. Then all the teeth were like wrenched out with a pair of pliers, and the creaching and the blood were terrific. Then I slushied this very pleased gollus of Dr. Brodsky going, "Excellent, excellent, excellent." The next long ticker film was of an old woman who kept a shop being kicked about amid very grumpy laughter by a lot of male chicks. And these male chicks broke up the shop and then set fire to it. You could vidy this poor starry petitza trying to crawl out of the flames, screaming and creeching, but having had her leg broke by these male chicks kicking her, she could not move. So then all the flames went roaring round her, and you could vidy her agonised litso like appealing through the flames and then disappearing into the flames. And then you could slushy the most grumpy and agonising screams that ever came from a human gollus. So this time I knew I had to sick up. So I creeched, "I want to be sick! Please let me be sick! Please bring something for me to sick into!" But this Dr. Brodsky called back, "Imagination only. You've nothing to worry about. Next film coming up." That was perhaps meant to be a joke, for I heard a, like, smack coming from the dark. And then I was forced to vidy a most nasty film about Japanese torture. It was the 1939-45 war, and there were soldiers being fixed to trees with nails and having fires lit under them and having their yarballs cut off. And you even vidy the Gulliver being sliced off a soldier with a sword, and then with his head rolling about and the rot and glazies looking still alive. The plot of this soldier actually ran about, crovying like a fountain out of the neck. And then it dropped, and all the time there was very, very loud laughter from the Japanese. The pains I felt now in my belly, and the headache and the thirst were terrible. They all seemed to be coming out of the screen, so I creeched, "Stop the film! Please, please stop it! I can't stand any more!" And then the gollus of this Dr. Brodsky said, "Stop it? Stop it, did you say? Why, we've hardly started!" And he and the others smacked quite loud. I do not wish to describe, brothers, what other horrible veshes I was like forced to vidy that afternoon. The like minds of Dr. Brodsky and Dr. Branham and the others in white coats, and remember there was this Ivotchka twiddling with the knobs and watching the meters. They must have been more cally and filthy than any prostupnik in the Stadia itself, because I did not think it was possible for any vet to even think of making films of what I was forced to vidy. All tied to this chair, my glazies made to be wide open. All I could do was to creech very grumpy for them to turn it off, and that light part drowned the noise of dratsin and fillin, and also the music that went with it all. You can imagine it was like a terrible relief when I vidied the last bit of film, and this Dr. Brodsky said in a very yawny and bored-like gollus, "I think that should be enough for day one, don't you, Branham?" And there I was, with the light switched on, my Gulliver throbbing like a bolshy big engine that makes pain, and my rot all dry and cally inside, and feeling I could, like, sick up every bit of pishka I had ever eaten, oh, my brothers, since the day I was, like, weaned. "All right," said this Dr. Brodsky. "He can be taken back to his bed." Then he, like, patted me on the plecho, and he said, "Good, good. Very promising start." Grinning all over his litso, then he, like, waddled out, Dr. Branham after him. But Dr. Branham gave me, like, a very droogy and sympathetic-type smile, as though he had nothing to do with all this vesh, and was, like, forced into it as I was. Anyhow, they freed my plot from the chair, and then they let go the skin above my glazes so that I could open and shut them again. And I shut them, oh, my brothers, with the pain and throb in my Gulliver, and then I was like carried to the old wheelchair and taken back to my Malenki bedroom. The undervec who willed me singing away at some hound and horny pop song, so that I like snarled, "Shut it, thou!" But he only smacked and said, "Never mind, friend," and then sang louder. So I was put into the bed and still felt bongnoy, but could not sleep. But soon I started to feel that soon I might start to feel that I might soon start feeling just a malenki bit better. And then I was brought some nice hot chai with plenty of maloko and saka. And peating that, I knew that that like horrible nightmare was in the past and all over. And then Dr. Branham came in, all nice and smiling. He said, "Well, by my calculation, you should be starting to feel all right again, yes?" "Sir," I said, like wary, I did not quite cope at what he was getting at, gover-eating about calculations, seeing that getting better from feeling bornoy is like your own affair and nothing to do with calculations. He sat down, all nice and droogy, on the bed's edge and said, "Dr. Brodsky is pleased with you. You had a very positive response. Tomorrow, of course, there'll be two sessions, morning and afternoon, and I should imagine that you'll be feeling a bit limp at the end of the day. But we have to be hard on you. You have to be cured." I said, "You mean I have to sit through? You mean I have to look at... Ah, no," I said. "It was horrible." "Of course it was horrible," smiled Dr. Branham. "Violence is a very horrible thing. That's what you're learning now. Your body is learning it." "But," I said, "I don't understand. I don't understand about feeling sick like I did. I never used to feel sick before. I used to feel like very the opposite. I mean, doing it or watching it, I used to feel real horror show. I just don't understand why or how or what." "Life is a very wonderful thing," said Dr. Branham in a like very holy gollus. "The processes of life, the makeup of the human organism, who can fully understand these miracles? Dr. Brodsky is, of course, a remarkable man. What is happening to you now is what should happen to any normal, healthy human organism contemplating the actions of the forces of evil, the workings of the principle of destruction. You are being made sane. You are being made healthy." "That I will not have," I said, "nor can understand at all. What you've been doing is to make me feel very, very ill." "Do you feel ill now?" he said, still with the old droogy smile on his litso. "Drinking tea? Resting? Having a quiet chat with a friend? Surely you're not feeling anything but well." I like listened and felt for pain and sickness in my Gulliver and plot, in a like cautious way. But it was true, brothers, that I felt real horror show and even wanting my dinner. "I don't get it," I said. "You must be doing something to make me feel ill." And I sort of frowned about that, thinking. "You felt ill this afternoon," he said, "because you're getting better. When we're healthy, we respond to the presence of the hateful with fear and nausea. You're becoming healthy, that's all. You'll be healthier still this time tomorrow." Then he patted me on the noggin and went out, and I tried to puzzle the whole vesh as best I could. What it seemed to me was that the wire and the other veshes that were fixed to my plot perhaps were making me feel ill, and that it was all a trick, really. I was still puzzling out all this and wondering whether I should refuse to be strapped down to this chair tomorrow and start a real bit of dratzing with them all, because I had my rights. When another Chelovec came in to see me, he was a like smiling starry vet who said he was what he called the discharge officer, and he carried a lot of bits of paper with him. He said, "Where will you go when you leave here?" I hadn't really thought about that sort of vesh at all, and it had only now really began to dawn on me that I'd be a fine free Malchik very soon. And then I vidded that would only be if I played it everybody's way and did not start any dratsing and creeching and refusing and so on. I said, "Oh, I shall go home, back to my P&M, your..." He didn't get Ned set talk at all, so I said, "To my parents in the dear old flat block." "I see," he said. "And where did you last have a visit from your parents?" "A month," I said. "Very near. They like suspended visiting for a bit because of one Prestupnik getting some blasting powder smuggled in across the wires from his Petitza. A real Cali trick to play on the innocent, like punishing them as well. So it's near a month since I had a visit." "I see," said this Vec. "And have your parents been informed of your transfer and impending release?" That had a real lovely zvuk, that did, that Slovo, release. I said, "No." Then I said, "It will be a nice surprise for them, that, won't it? Me just walking through the front door and saying, 'Here I am, back, a free Vec again.' Yeah, real horror show." "Right," said the discharge officer Vec. "We'll leave it at that. So long as you have somewhere to live. Now there's the question of you having a job, isn't there?" And he showed me this long list of jobs I could have, but I thought, well, there would be time enough for that. A nice Malenki holiday first. I could do a cresting job soon as I got out and fill the old Carmen's with Pretty Polly. But I would have to be very careful, and I would have to do the job all on my oddy knocky. I did not trust so-called droves any more. So I told this vet to leave it a bit, and we would gather it about it again. He said, right, 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 then got ready to leave. He showed himself to be a very queer sort of vet, because what he did now was like to giggle, and then say, would you like to punch me in the face before I go? I did not think I could possibly have slushied that right, so I said, eh? Would you, he giggled, like to punch me in the face before I go? I frowned like at that, very puzzled, and said, why? Oh, he said, just to see how you're getting on. And he brought his lips so real near, a fat grin all over his rot. So I fisted up and went smack at this litzo. He pulled himself away real scorry, grinning still, and my rooker just punched air. Very puzzling this was, and I frowned as he left, smacking his Gulliver off. And then, my brothers, I felt real sick again, just like in the afternoon, just for a couple of minutes. It then passed off scorry. And when they brought my dinner in, I found I had a fair appetite and was ready to crunk away at the roast chicken. But it was funny that starry Chelovet asking for a tolchok in the litzo. And it was funny feeling sick like that. What was even funnier was when I went to sleep that night, oh my brothers, I had a nightmare and, as you might expect, it was one of those bits of film I'd vidded in the afternoon. A dream or nightmare is really only like a film inside your Gulliver, except it is as though you could walk into it and be part of it. And this is what happened to me. It was a nightmare of one of the bits of film they showed me near the end of the afternoon light session. All of smacking Malchik's doing the ultra-violent on a young Petitza, who was screeching away in her red, red crovy. Her plait is all raz-rezed, real horror show. I was in this feeling about, smacking away and being like the ringleader, dressed in the height of Nadset fashion. And then at the height of all this dratsin and tolchokin, I felt like paralysed and wanted to be very sick, and all the other Malchik's had a real gromky smack at me. Then I was dratsing my way back to being awake all through my own crovy, pints and quarts and gallons of it. And then I found myself in my bed in this room. I wanted to be sick, so I got out of the bed all trembly, so as to go off down the corridor to the old vase. But behold, brothers, the door was locked, and turning round, I vidded for like the first raz that there were bars on the window. And so, as I reached for the little pot in the Malenki cupboard beside the bed, I vidded that there would be no escaping from any of all this. Worse, I did not dare to go back into my own sleeping Gulliver. I soon found I did not want to be sick after all, but then I was poogly of getting back into bed to sleep. But soon I fell smack into sleep and did not dream any more. Stop it, stop it, I kept on creeching out. Turn it off, you grazing bastards, for I can stand no more. It was the next day, brothers, and I had truly done my best, morning and afternoon, to play it their way, and sit like a horror show smiling cooperative Malchik in the chair of torture while they flashed nasty bits of ultra-violence on the screen. My glazies clipped open to vidy all, my plot and rookers and nogas fixed to the chair so I could not get away. But what I was being made to vidy now was not really a vesh I would have thought to be too bad before, it being only three or four Malchiks crashing in a shop and filling their carmans with cutter, at the same time filling about with a creechy starry petitza running a shop, toll-chocking her and letting the red, red crovy flow. But the throb and like crash, crash, crash in my Gulliver, and the wanting to be sick, and the terrible dry rasping thirstiness in my rot, all were worse than yesterday. Oh, I've had enough, I cried. It's not fair, you vonny sods. And I tried to struggle out of the chair, but it was not possible, me being as good as stuck to it. First class, creeched out Dr. Brodsky. You're doing really well. Just one more, then we're finished. What it was now was the starry 1939-45 war again, and it was a very blobby and liney and crackly film you could vidy had been made by the Germans. It opened with German eagles and the Nazi flag with that, like, crooked cross that all Malchiks at school loved to draw. And then there were very haughty and Nadmany-like German officers walking through streets that were all dust and bomb holes and broken buildings. Then you were allowed to vidy ludies being shot against walls, officers giving the orders, and also horrible Nagoy plots left lying in gutters. all like cages of bare ribs and white thin nogas. Then there were ludis being dragged off creaching, though not on the soundtrack, my brothers, the only sound being music, and being toll-chopped while they were dragged off. Then I noticed, in all my pain and sickness, what music was that like crackled and boomed on the soundtrack. And it was Ludwig van, the last movement of the Fifth Symphony. And I creached like Bazumi at that. "Stop," I creached. "Stop, you grasny, disgusting sods. It's a sin. That's what it is. A filthy, unforgivable sin, you brachnies." They didn't stop right away because there was only a minute or two more to go. Ludis being beaten up and all crovy. Then more firing squads. Then the old Nazi flag and the end. But when the lights came on, this Dr. Brodsky and also Dr. Branham were standing in front of me. And Dr. Brodsky said, "What's all this about sin, eh?" "That," I said, very sick, "using Ludwig van like that. It did no harm to anyone. Beethoven just wrote music." And then I was really sick and I had to bring a bowl that was in the shape of like a kidney. "Music," said Dr. Brodsky, like musing. "So you're keen on music?" "I know nothing about it myself. It's a useful emotional heightener. That's all I know. Well, well. What do you think about that, eh, Branham?" "It can't be helped," said Dr. Branham. "Each man kills the thing he loves, as the poet prisoner said. Here's the punishment element, perhaps. The governor ought to be pleased." "Give me a drink," I said, "for Bog's sake." "Loosen him," ordered Dr. Brodsky. "Fetch him a carafe of ice-cold water." So then these undervets got to work, and soon I was peeing gallons and gallons of water. And it was like heaven, oh my brothers. Dr. Brodsky said, "You seem a sufficiently intelligent young man. You seem to be not without taste. You've just got this violence thing, haven't you? Violence and theft. Theft being an aspect of violence." I didn't gather eat a single slovo, brothers. I was still feeling sick, though getting a malenky bit better now. But it had been a terrible day. "Now then," said Dr. Brodsky, "how do you think this is done? Tell me, what do you think we're doing to you?" "You're making me feel ill. I'm ill when I look at those filthy, pervert films of yours. But it's not really the films that's doing it. But I feel that if you stop these films, I'll stop feeling ill." "Right," said Dr. Brodsky. "It's association, the oldest educational method in the world. And what really causes you to feel ill?" "These grasny sodding veshes that come out of my Gulliver and my plot," I said. "That's what it is." "Quaint," said Dr. Brodsky, like smiling. "The dialect of the tribe. Do you know anything of its provenance, Branham?" "Odd bits of old rhyming slang," said Dr. Branham. Did not look quite so much like a friend anymore. "A bit of gypsy talk, too. But most of the roots are Slav. Propaganda, subliminal penetration." "All right, all right, all right," said Dr. Brodsky, like impatient and not interested anymore. "Well," he said to me, "it isn't the wires. It's nothing to do with what's fastened to you. Those are just for measuring your reactions." "What is it, then?" I vidded then, of course. What a Bazumni shoot I was not to notice. It was the hypodermic shots in the rooker. "Oh," I creeched. "Oh, I vidded all now. A filthy Calivoni trick. An act of treachery. Sod you, and you won't do it again." "I'm glad you've raised your objections now," said Dr. Brodsky. "Now we can be perfectly clear about it. We can get this stuff of Ludovico's into your system in many different ways. Orally, for instance. But the subcutaneous method is the best. Don't fight against it, please. There's no point in your fighting. You can't get the better of us." "Grasny Bratchneys," I said, like snivelling. Then I said, "I don't mind about the ultraviolence and all that, Cal. I put up with that. But it's not fair on the music. It's not fair I should feel ill when I'm sluicing lovely Ludwig van and G.F. Handel and others. All that shows you're an evil lot of bastards and I shall never forgive you, sods." They both looked a bit like thoughtful. Then Dr. Brodsky said, "Delimitation is always difficult. The world is one. Life is one. The sweetest and most heavenly of activities partake in some measure of violence. The act of love, for instance. Music, for instance. You must take your chance, boy. The choice has been all yours." I didn't understand all these slovos, but now I said, "You needn't take it any further, sir." I changed my tune a malenky bit in my cunning way. You've proved to me that all this dratsin and ultra-violence and killing is wrong. Wrong and terribly wrong. I've learnt my lesson, sirs. I see now what I've never seen before. I'm cured. Praise God. And I raised my glazies in a like holy way to the ceiling. But both these doctors shook their gullivers like sadly, and Dr. Brodsky said, "You're not cured yet. There's still a lot to be done. Only when your body reacts promptly and violently to violence, as to a snake without further help from us, without medication, only then." I said, "But sir, sirs, I see that it's wrong. It's wrong because it's against like society, and it's wrong because every vec on earth has the right to live and be happy without being beaten and told, chopped and knifed. I've learnt a lot. Oh, really I have." But Dr. Brodsky had a loud smack at that, showing all his white zubies, and said, "The heresy of an age of reason," or some such slovos. "I see what is right and approve, but I do what is wrong. No, no, my boy, you must leave it all to us. But be cheerful about it. It will soon be all over. In less than a fortnight, you'll be a free man." Then he patted me on the plecho. Less than a fortnight. Oh, my brothers and friends. It was like an age. It was like from the beginning of the world to the end of it. To finish the 14 years without remission in nostalgia would have been nothing to it. Every day it was the same. When the Divotchka with the hypodermic came round, though, 4 days after this gubber eating with Dr. Brodsky and Dr. Branham, I said, "Oh, no, you won't," and told her on the rooker, and the syringe went tinkle-clatter onto the floor. That was like to Vidi what they would do. What they did was to get 4 or 5 real bolshy white-coated bastards of Undervex to hold me down on the bed, told-chocking me with grinny litzos close to mine. And then this nurse Petitza said, "You wicked, naughty little devil, you!" While she jabbed my rooker with another syringe and squirted this stuff in real brutal and nasty. And then I was wheeled off exhausted to this like hell cine as before. Every day, my brothers, these films were like the same, all kicking and toe-chocking, and the red, red crovy dripping off of litzos and plots and spatting all over the camera lenses. It was usually grinning and smecking malchicks in the height of Nadsat fashion, or else tee-hee-heeing Jap torturers or brutal Nazi kickers and shooters. And each day the feeling of wanting to die with the sickness, and Gulliver pains, and aches in the zubies, and horrible, horrible thirst grew really worse. Until one morning I tried to defeat the bastards by crash, crash, crashing my Gulliver against the wall so that I should toll-chock myself unconscious. But all that happened was I felt sick, with Vidian that this kind of violence was like the violence in the films. So I was just exhausted and was given the injection and was wheeled off like before. And then came a morning when I woke up and had my breakfast of eggs and toast and jam and very hot milky chai. And then I thought, it can't be much longer now. Now must be very near the end of the time. I have suffered to the heights and cannot suffer any more. And I waited and waited, brothers, for this nurse Petitza to bring in the syringe, but she did not come. And then the white-coated undervet came and said, "Today, old friend, we are letting you walk." "Walk," I said. "Where?" "To the usual place," he said. "Yes, yes, look not so astonished. You are to walk to the films, me with you, of course. You are no longer to be carried in a wheelchair." "But," I said, "how about my horrible morning injection?" For I was really surprised at this, brothers, they being so keen on pushing this Ludovico vest into me, as they said. "Don't I get that horrible sicky stuff rammed into my poor suffering rooker any more?" "All over. Like smeck this vec. Forever and ever, amen. You're on your own now, boy, walking and all to the Chamber of Horrors. But you're still to be strapped down and made to see. Come on then, my little tiger." And I had to put my overgown and twofles on and walk down the corridor to the like cine mesto. Now this time, oh my brothers, I was not only very sick but very puzzled. There it was again. All the old ultra-violence and vexed with their gallivers smashed and torn, crovy dripping petitzas, creeching for mercy, the like private and individual filling and nastiness. Then there were the prison camps and the Jews and the grey-like foreign streets full of tanks and uniforms and vets going down in withering rifle fire. this being the public side of it. And this time I could blame nothing for me feeling sick and thirsty and full of aches except what I was forced to vidy, my glasses still being clipped open and my nogas and plot fixed to the chair, but this set of wires and other veshes no longer coming out of my plot and gulliver. So what could it be but the films I was vidying that were doing this to me? Except, of course, brothers, that this Ludovico stuff was like a vaccination, and there it was cruising about in my crovy, so that I would be sick always, forever and ever, amen, whenever I vidied any of this ultra-violence. So now I squared my rot and went boo-boo-hoo, and the tears like blotted out what I was forced to vidy in like all blessed runny silvery dewdrops. But these white-coated Bratchneys were scorry with their tashtooks to wipe the tears away, saying, "There, there, wasms, all weepy, weepy, then." And there it was again, all clear before my glazies, these Germans prodding like beseeching and weeping Jews, Vex and Chinas and Malchiks and Divotchkas, intermestos, where they would all snuff it of poison gas. Boo-hoo-hoo, I had to go again. And along they came to wipe the tears off, very scorry, so I should not miss one solitary vesh of what they were showing. It was a terrible and horrible day, oh my brothers and only friends. I was lying on the bed all alone that notchy after my dinner of fat thick mutton stew and fruit pie and ice cream, and I thought to myself, hell, 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 there might be a chance for me if I get out now. I had no weapon, though. I was allowed no Brit for here, and I've been shaved every day by a fat, bald-headed Vec who came to my bed before breakfast, two white-coated Bratchneys standing by to video I was a good, non-violent Malchik. The nails on my rookers had been scissored and filed real short, so I could not scratch. But I was still scorry on the attack, though they had weakened me down, brothers, to like a shadow of what I'd been in the old free days. So now I got off the bed, and went to the locked door and began to fist it real horror-showing hard, creaking at the same time, "Oh, help, help, I'm sick, I'm dying. Doctor, doctor, quick, please, oh, I'll die, I shall help." My gorlo was real dry and sore before anyone came. Then I heard nogas coming down the corridor, and a like grumbling gollus, and then I recognised the gollus of the white-coated Vec who brought me pisture and like escorted me to my daily doom. He like grumbled, "What is it? What goes on? What's your little nasty game in there?" "Oh, I'm dying," I like moaned. "Oh, I have a ghastly pain in my side. Appendicitis it is. Oh, oh." "Appendy shithouse," grumbled this Vec. And then to my joy, brothers, I could slushy the little clank of keys. "If you're trying it, little friend, my friends and me will beat and kick you all through the night." Then he opened up and brought in like the sweet air of the promise of my freedom. Now I was like behind the door when he pushed it open, and I could vidy him in the corridor light looking round for me puzzled. Then I raised my two fisties to toll-chock him on the neck nasty, and then I swear, as I sort of vidied him and advanced, lying moaning or out, 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 and felt the light joy rise in my guts. It was then that this sickness rose in me as it might be a wave, and I felt a horrible fear, as if I was really going to die. I like tottered over to the bed going, "Ugh, ugh, ugh," and the Vec, who was not in his white coat but an overgown, vidied clear enough what I had had in my mind, for he said, "Well, everything's a lesson, isn't it? Learning all the time, as you could say. Come on, little friend, get up from that bed and hit me. I want you to, yes, really. A real good crack across the jaw. Oh, I'm dying for it, really I am." But all I could do, brothers, was just lay there sobbing, "Boo, boo, hoo, scum," like sneered this Vec now, "filth." And he pulled me up like the scruff of my pyjama top, me being very weak and limp. And he raised and swung his right rooker so they got a fair old toll chock clean on the litzo. "That," he said, "it's for getting me out of my bed, you young dirt." Then he wiped his rookers against each other, swish, 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 and went out. Crunch, crunch, went the key in the lock. And what, brothers, I had to escape into sleep from then was the horrible and wrong feeling that it was better to get hit than to give it. If that vac had stayed, I might even have presented the other cheek.